Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Global Ports Holding first half interim results conference call. Today's speakers will be Mr. Emre Sayin, CEO, and Ms. Ferda Ürgür, CFO. I'll now hand over to your host, Mr. Emre Sayin. Sir, please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the interim results for the first 6 months that ended on June 30th, 2017. I will start by giving you a highlight of the first half, and then we can proceed with questions. The first half of our commercial segment was, I would say, very good, with about 5% growth in terms of EBITDA. Our results seem to be unaffected by the Turkish geopolitical situation. And the ongoing business, especially looking at the throughput increase, the container business is very strong. We expect a strong second half. On the cruise side, we had strong cruise passenger number growth, both organically and inorganically. Although the financial performance was affected by the weakness of the consumer sentiment in towards Turkish cruise ports. The overall segmental EBITDA was down by 7.2%, although the commercial segmental EBITDA grew by about 5%, on the cruise side we saw a decline of $3.6 million to $10.1 million this half. There was an additional negative forex impact from weaker euro, because we price all our cruise ports and the port of Adria in euro, and that resulted in a loss after tax of $6.7 million. Which is mostly coming from the $15.1 million of amortization expense in relation to port operation rights, which is a non-cash item. The operating cash flow was strong, with $25.2 million for the period, and the net debt to EBITDA ratio was 2.9, in line with our financial policy. As you know, we are... Our strategy is to expand geographically, and this will lead to a decrease in the importance of the Turkish ports further. And there was good progress in our M&A pipeline, although we are not able to disclose anything yet as of the first half of 2017, and. We have also announced an interim dividend of 21.6 pence per share in terms of British pounds. In terms of the outlook, because of the lower contribution of the Turkish ports, we are changing our outlook to a single-digit growth for the full year, even though we expect a better second half. We want to be cautious at this point. Like I said, we are hoping some positive developments in our M&A pipeline in the second half, and we will share those news with you as they develop. So that's an overview for H1, and I think at this point it would be good to start with the Q&A. But before that, I just want to say a couple of sentences about the big picture. We have shared with you during the IPO that we were not really expecting a recovery in the Turkish ports in 2017, and I always mentioned 2018 and 19, and we are still keeping that view, and we are positive that the Turkish ports will come around And when they do, this will actually have very positive impact on our numbers. In fact, I told you in the first quarter that in line with this view, we keep investing in our ports in Turkey, and we have undergone a major renovation of the shopping mall in Kuşadası, which actually has an impact in these numbers. That's why they are negative as well. Like I said, this is still our view, and our non-Turkish cruise ports are in line with our expectations. And in fact, the increasing passenger numbers show that the commercial side of the business is performing very strongly, and I'm very glad with those numbers. And we'll discuss that further in the call. So I just wanted to highlight that we think we are in line, and strategically, although we have an unexpected situation, a disappointment in the Turkish ports in H1, we are in line with our plans. So that's what I wanted to share with you as well. So right now, I think we can proceed with the Q&A.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now start our Q&A session. If you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you for holding until we have our first question. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you for holding. Our first question is from Martin Drain from Shore Capital. Please go ahead.
Morning all, Martin Drain from Shore here. A few questions, please, just on commercial and Port Antalya in particular. Obviously, through the half, you've been lapping the lower volumes from the Chinese Marble investigation. Can you provide a bit more detail as to how those volumes have progressed throughout the year versus last year, and whether the strong ongoing momentum and growth year-on-year has continued into the second half, or whether we've just seen the recovery as expected, but the volume growth kind of going into the second half is more muted, or whether there's a continuation of the strong upward trend from the first half? Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. Well, as you indicated, the Chinese Marble investigation had impacted our numbers last year, and we have shared with you that that impact was disappearing over time. And when we look at the numbers, when I look at the numbers in the first half, I see a 17% growth in our TEU volumes. This is mainly driven by the Antalya Marble exports, and that business is now strong. And we are not expecting any negatives from either the investigation or the Chinese market. So I would say, in short, the effects are gone. And when I look at the year-end, in fact, we are actually expecting a continuation of the current picture, I would say. So it's very positive.
Okay, thank you. And then on your comment on project cargo being lower, could you provide some more details on that and whether any planned or scheduled or forecast project cargo from the first half has been delayed, and whether that is then coming through in the second half, or if not, when you would expect to see that project cargo come through the ports? Thank you.
Sure. So you mentioned project cargo. These are basically the types of businesses that are on contract, and we treat them as specific projects. And every year we have a number of projects, and usually have higher revenue impact, lower volume impact, and we put them under the cargo volumes. So having said that, this year we so far we didn't really record any considerable revenue from the project cargo, either in Antalya nor in Adria, and we're expecting project cargo volumes in both ports in the second half of the year. So not including the project cargo volumes, actually our business is even stronger. The growth numbers are higher, and we have some contracts for the second half. That's why we are expecting an even stronger second half from the commercial side, including the project cargo volumes and revenues.
Okay, that's great, thank you. And if I can have one more before I'll go off and let others have some questions, but I may come back. On Barcelona-Malaga, could you talk a little bit more, provide some more information around the split between Barcelona and Malaga, and the turnaround transit, and why that's was different to perhaps expectations, and what kind of visibility you have on that, and then your thoughts for how that will come through in the second half and into 2018.
Thank you. So as you know, we are recording Barcelona and Malaga together as one company, Cruairs, and the numbers that we have are the summation of the two ports. What happened this year is that Royal Caribbean and Norwegian, I believe, moved a couple of big ships, giant ships, mega ships, I should say, to the Caribbean, and ships replacing them are actually coming to our ports, but it will be 2018 by the time they come. So this introduced a slight dent in the turnaround passenger numbers, especially in Barcelona. It's a temporary thing, and we see numbers strong in 2018. But you don't see that in the numbers for Cruairs, because in the meantime, Malaga actually had recorded really good increases in turnaround passengers. So that kind of changed the mix of the numbers in Cruairs, and that's kind of affecting the passenger mix, because these two ports, of course, obviously have different revenue numbers, revenue per passenger numbers. So the outlook for 2018 is very positive, because we will keep the Malaga numbers and the Barcelona numbers will be positively affected by the mega ships coming into the Barcelona ports.
Okay, excellent, thank you. And sorry, just one final one on Barcelona. I promise everyone else I'll disappear. The retail plans at Barcelona, in terms of, could you provide an update on where you are and what you're planning to do with the retail offering in Barcelona?
Sure. Okay. So the retail plans in Barcelona are actually twofold. One is the biggest part of the plan is redesigning the retail in Barcelona. The second part of the plan is using that new layout and that new design, also introducing some guest services, some concierge type of services to the cruise passengers. We have kickstarted that program in Barcelona, and we are now working with one of the most experienced, best consultants in the world in travel retail design and architecture. And we will start with one or two terminals in Barcelona and convert them. And on top of that, we have started implementing what we call guest information centers. We have now actually two in the big terminals in Barcelona. We have also started implementing them in other ports. These are basically both service and information points for cruise passengers, but at the same time, they are sales channels for the services that we are developing in those ports. So, you know, those were the plans that we had announced during the IPO, and we have started them, and I expect by the end of the year to have detailed plans about the new design in Barcelona terminals.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Our next question is from James Ainley from Citi. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. A number of questions, please. Maybe I could just start with Kusha Darcy. Could you give us maybe a bit more colour in terms of what plans or what you're seeing in terms of forward indicators from the cruise lines, either for the second half or indeed into 28? Give us a bit more certainty on expectations there. And then maybe I'll take them one by one. So if I start with that, please.
Sure. So you're asking about the expectations for Kusha Darcy for the second half of this year and going forward, as I understand, from the cruise lines, right?
Yes.
Right. So, look, we let me start from here. Last year, second half, we have shared with investors that the number of ships from the East Med have been moved to the West Med. In fact, some of those ships landed in our port, so there was partial recovery, and those ships are not in East Med anymore. But some ships remained, and they visited our ports, and hence there was a drop, a considerable amount of drop in passenger volumes in the second half. But there were some ships still visiting. And you have to understand that passengers in these ships have been sold those itineraries sometimes a year ago, sometimes 18 months ago. So they know that those ships will be visiting Kusha Darcy or Bodrum, whatever. So it's part of their itinerary. What happened this year is because of the political tensions that were quite unexpected, especially after the ruling party, got the referendum the way they wanted, these tensions continued, and consumer sentiment started, continued to be low, and that affected the number of passengers leaving the ship when in port. In the summer itineraries, which basically was decided by the cruise ports at the end of May, beginning of June, they decided to, as I said, skip the Turkish ports. Now, this is not a very common incident, as I say, meaning there is still a chance that they have made a quick decision about skipping the ports. In their Aegean itineraries, they may also decide to revisit our ports. So that's what we are working towards for the year of 2017. And one critical factor could have been an incentive announced by the Turkish government that was basically $30 per passenger for every cruise line visiting Turkey, but because there are no big cruise lines visiting Turkey at the moment, this incentive didn't come through. So it was kind of like a chicken and egg story. What we're trying to do right now is break that vicious cycle and have big cruise lines start visiting the Turkish ports, so that we can also work with the government on releasing this incentive, which I believe will further incentivize cruise lines. So that's 2017. 2018 and 19, I think, will be different because it takes basically time for the consumer sentiments to change. And one positive thing it has been that there has been no incidents so far in Turkey, and things are very peaceful and calm. So I hope this will continue, and we will see ships coming back in, at the beginning of the season in 2018. So that's basically what we're trying to do right now, in summary.
Okay, thank you. Okay, then the second question is, could you give us your latest thoughts on Havana and Nassau? I think when we spoke at the Q1 numbers, you were about to host, do another visit to Nassau in particular, and you're working towards a memorandum of understanding, so some updates on those, please.
Right, both projects are progressing, and we have made further progress in Havana, and I expect material development, hopefully before this year is over. And we are working with the government very closely. In fact, there are committees set up, and we're working very closely. For Nassau, we have made further amendments to our plans, also because of the fact that there was a re-election in the Bahamas, and the new ministers wanted detailed updates on the plans, and wanted to see some amendments. We have done those. And Bahama is also, I think, progressing. Although we have not signed an MOU yet, I think we are at least closing in on the details to a possible MOU. Having said that, those are not the only projects we work on in the Caribbean. We are simultaneously looking at a number of other projects. Some of these, unfortunately, I cannot mention here because of confidentiality, but I would say the number is close to 10 right now.
Okay, thanks. And then the last one, just on Dubrovnik, can you just talk about where we are in that process and when you might expect to start construction? Again, there's been quite a lot of negative news flow about the impact of cruise lines on the city of Dubrovnik, and your views and comments on that would be helpful.
Sure. So Dubrovnik is, I don't know if you've seen Dubrovnik, it's a beautiful city, but at the same time it's a walled city. It's very, let's say, full of people always in the streets. And I think the people in Dubrovnik are sensitive about congestion, about cruise traffic. And unfortunately, cruise ships are so big and they always attract attention. And although, cruise passengers are not the majority of the tourists in Dubrovnik, that seems to be kind of the visible problem always. What we are planning to do in Dubrovnik is actually going to help manage the traffic further, and it will create alternative excursions and divert the traffic and manage the traffic. And in fact, the port we are planning to build will be an attraction center itself, and it is actually outside the old city limits. So all in all, I think it's a positive project in terms of managing the cruise tourism in Dubrovnik. Having said that, in these cities there are always naysayers, and it takes time to bring everyone on the same page. We are working on that exactly at the moment, and the new local government, which was basically elected in June, right after we had our first Q call, did ask for, again, explanations, and they also asked for some amendments on the project. And we have done those, we have submitted those, we have also decided to, in line with the expectations of the local government, we have also decided to bring in local shareholders with minority shares, which will, I think, improve and increase the buy-in into the project in Dubrovnik. And simultaneously we're working with the central government in finalizing everything, such as the environmental permits are completed. So basically, we have done our part. Right now, I think I expect until October for the local government to basically give a go to this project, and then we start. We will have a speedy process, and I expect within a very short time, we will start construction after that.
And to what extent is your interest in that port being diluted then? Because I think you had a 75% interest previously.
Yes, we are. That was the plan, and at the moment, we think we may go down to, say, average 65% with the local shareholders. There is, of course, Bouygues, who is our partner and the French construction company, who also thinks of selling down a little bit if local investors are interested. So altogether, our concern or our share may go down to 65%, but not more.
And is there likely to be any material change in the total project cost, or indeed in terms of the tariff uplifts? Because I think you're expecting some substantial tariff uplifts.
Correct.
In the project.
Correct. No, the amendments, we made sure that the amendments would not change the overall cost of the project. The tariff structure is not among the list of things that we discuss with the government right now. In fact, I think it's one of those rare projects where the government does not ask us to increase the numbers considerably. What they ask us is that we manage that traffic well, and that we improve the quality of service.
Understood. Thank you very much.
Our next question is from Mehdi Karugabi from FIM Partners. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you very much for hosting the call. I have a couple of questions. First, quick one on the commercial segment. If we look at the your yields, it seems that your yields dropped. So we see general cargo and containers growing by 40% in Q2, while revenues are up only 5% and margins are down. So could you just clarify what happened to the yields there?
Sure. I think on the container side, there's not that much drop in the yields, but the cargo side is dropping, as you said. That's actually due to a mix effect. We had higher yield products like coal and wood chips in the portfolio last year, and I remember very well talking about increasing the cement business in both ports. In fact, that happened, and the cement business is the reason why the cargo volumes are up. But it also decreased the average yield because cement, in terms of its yield, is very low. It's a volume business. It's actually profitable, so although the price is low, profitability is high for us. We don't have to touch the product too much. We don't have to do too much. But that's the main reason why the cargo volumes, cargo yields are down.
Okay.
And there's one more thing, and that is, I actually mentioned that. The project cargo goes into the cargo role. And it's very low in volume, high in value, so it actually increases the average yield of that category. So when mm-hmm. we don't have any project cargo, such as the first half of this year, it looks like the yields are dropping sharply. But when they do come in again, for example, there's a windmill project in Adria that we're expecting next year. The numbers will pick up again. Sorry, I said next year, next half.
Next half. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And if we look at the cruise business, I mean, you've mentioned obviously we can see the weakness of the Turkish ports, but if I look also at the passengers numbers, whether be it in Valletta or Spain, we can see significant growth in terms of passengers, but again, revenues flat or slightly down. So is that a currency effect, or is the consumer sentiment weak across the Mediterranean, or is it mostly a Turkish effect that explains the drop in revenues and the drop in margins?
So the consumer sentiment is definitely a Turkish problem for the time being in our ports. And one we hope will disappear over time. It's true that our passenger numbers are looking very good this half. And in fact, you know, you're seeing 14% increase in our ports. This is without without including Lisbon, Venice, and Singapore. If we included those, the increase would actually be 20%. So that I think is very good news, and to me it's basically potential. You know, it's potential to execute our plans in ancillary revenues and you know, look at tariffs, etc., to record higher revenues in the future. And I also want to underline the fact that in this sense we are probably performing much better than you know, the average European ports or the Mediterranean ports. Having said that, there has been, like you said, different reasons for different ports why revenues are not increasing as much. This can be, I actually mentioned one, Barcelona, for example. The turnaround mix has decreased in Barcelona, which increases the revenue numbers. But when the turnaround passengers come back with the mega ships next year, these numbers will become the same as 2016 again. In Valletta, I think there are yet you know, again, other reasons why revenues did not pick up as much. It had to do with the cigarette sales in the travel retail shop of Valletta, but I think these are things that we can improve in time. And all in all, I'm actually quite happy with the passenger numbers.
Okay. So this is, you would say, generates mostly basically drop in of yields in Valletta. You've explained the issue in Barcelona and Turkey. Okay. And you've said something about potentially Turkey coming back in terms of transit passengers early next year. My understanding is that the projects or the itineraries for the cruise ships are usually decided quite in advance. Is that a fact? Do you have like factual evidence from the big cruise ship operators that the Turkish market should come back from early next year, or is that more of a speculation?
Yeah, it's neither. It's not a speculation. It's not a it's not an itinerary plan. We do have a kind of a special case in Turkey, as I told you. Although the ports were part of the itineraries of the ships that are going around in the Aegean, which is basically the sea between Greece and Turkey, they decided, quite recently to pass over the Turkish ports because of the extraordinary situation. And that's why we think, in the same way, they can decide to come back. And that, of course, will require a lot of, touching base with the cruise liners and working with the government. But I don't see any reason why it shouldn't happen. And we have past experience that it happened that way. I don't want to say that it's part of the itineraries, but that's what we'll work towards. And hence I use the word, I hope it will be as early as the beginning of 2018 that they put us back into those itineraries.
Okay. And just to understand from the point of view of the cruise ship operator, if they skip the transit, the Turkish ports, which ports do they use, or do they just maybe extend the duration at sea and don't make a transit at all? Just trying to assess who benefits from those the Turkish ports being skipped, in a sense.
Greek islands. In our case, okay. In the Turkish case, it's Greek islands. They usually don't extend the time at sea because that's extra fuel costs. They stop over at Greek islands. Having said that,
okay.
Skipping Kuşadası and stopping in a Greek island for the cruise line is also a loss of revenues, because Kuşadası is a very profitable port for cruise lines as well.
Okay.
In terms of excursions, in terms of shopping.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And one last one from me. You've mentioned obviously all the opportunities you're working on, inorganic, and also the work you're doing in Havana, in the Bahamas. Which opportunity? I understand you cannot release too much details, but which one you think is more imminent or you're more excited about, in a sense?
I'm looking at my chief business development officer right now. I would say Cuba, but Arpak, do you want to name a few that are more imminent?
Yeah, actually Cuba and Nassau would be more imminent. There are more imminent ones that we're looking into, but for confidential reasons, because we're discussing on bilateral basis, and this becoming, known would jeopardize our deal, so we cannot disclose that. But I think we have mentioned this. All those ports are, and the other ones, couple of other ones that we cannot mention are also 1.5 million plus ports. So anything that we get our hands on in Caribbean is going to be a significant growth opportunity for us. And not only going into the region with a big ticket, but also contributing significantly and getting our hands on those major ports. So all of them are major hub ports with further growth potentials, and we are basically introducing those potentials with our new development projects as well. But as Emre put it, it is the ones that we can disclose. The most imminent are going to be Cuba and Havana and Nassau. So the other ones, we're waiting to hear from some of them. From most of the others, we're going through a unsolicited proposal and bilateral discussion basis. So that's the most I can disclose at this point.
Okay, thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you for holding, and do we have any further questions? We have a follow-up question from James Ainley from Citi. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my other question. I just want to get a bit more colour, please, on the situation in Valletta. You alluded to the fact there were lower cigarette sales. Can you explain maybe why that was and what you can do to reverse that? Because it does look like quite a sharp fall in the revenue per passenger in Valletta.
Sure. I actually mentioned that as one of the reasons. It's not the only reason, of course, but the cigarette sales, which impacted the travel retail shop thing, is actually was a special case. It was understood that crew was getting some of these cigarettes, and that was causing some concern on our side, because we know that people are not smoking. I'm sorry?
Can I elaborate on this?
Sure. Yeah, Stephen, please.
Okay. I mean, apart from what Emre is saying, I am, the thing is that, first of all, there was a change in itinerary in one of the cruise lines that we were allowed to sell cigarettes to. TUI Cruises changed their itinerary this year. They're not visiting non-EU ports. So that impacted cigarette sales. And we've seen a trend that with the big cruise ships now, the average spend per passenger has gone a bit down. But that's not the, that's not the only reason why there was an impact on revenue in Valletta. I mean, the decrease in passengers was mainly during the period January to March, and that is the winter cruising season. And in order to attract these winter cruises, we apply special tariffs for that period. So that was also an impact on the revenues.
Okay. So you're saying effectively you traded yield for higher passengers through that period?
Yes, because I mean it's the winter period, so we try to attract them to our port rather than the cruise line going to another neighboring port.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
I just want to add, though. I mean, just to make sure that the picture is not so pessimistic, Valletta has succeeded in growing their EBITDA by 12%. Over last year, so I think that's still a considerable accomplishment.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you for holding. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you for holding. We have no further questions. Dear speakers, back to you for the conclusion.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, I think you have seen after your questions as well that, you know, it's except for a very specific disappointment in terms of commercial business being on track, in terms of passenger numbers growing, in terms of making progress in the M&A pipeline, we are on track, and we are, I think, executing our strategy. So, for the long term, I'm actually not concerned about this incident happening in Turkey. Having said that, of course, it bothers me that our numbers have been affected so much. Unfortunately, these are the most profitable ports that we have, and we'll do everything possible to get the ships back to Turkey, and we're making plans for it right now as we stand. I think, you know, that's summarizing pretty much the first half for us. In the meantime, I also want to underline again that we have taken crucial steps in terms of executing the plans on the ancillary revenue side. I think one thing that I probably did not mention is that finally we have a member in our team responsible for ancillary revenues in our marketing team. Burak just joined us from an economy airline company. He was responsible for ancillary revenues there, and to my knowledge, economy airlines, basically it's their revenue stream or profit stream, mostly the ancillary revenues, and it's a very important part of their revenue management. So that also gives us hope that we'll step on gas when it comes to that part. Hopefully in the next call we will be able to give you better news on the mergers and acquisition side, and basically be on our way with our plans. Thank you very much for joining, and as always, we're open to further questions from you. Please feel free to contact us through our IR department. Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. Thank you all for your participation. You may now disconnect.